the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to the New South Wales Country Hour, broadcasting today from the Royal Easter Show. And we're right outside the Cattle Pavilion. The judging is underway for the Urquhart Trophy, I understand, and also the Horden Trophy as well. We hope to have the winners of that on tomorrow's program and on the Rural Reports as well in the morning. Josh Becker's here with me. You'll be handling that, I gather.
Yeah, that's right. Looking forward to it. It's a perfect day to be at the Royal Easter Show, and we can see the cattle are being judged behind us as we speak. We're perched up in the bar. It's past 12 o'clock, and some people have finished their exhibition already, and they're, I think, having a quiet refreshment.
That's right, a couple of beers, maybe a Bundy and Coke or something like that. But Murray Wilson's joined us now from the show, and you're not going to get on the sauce just yet.
Give it a couple of minutes. I tell you what, it's not too bad. You're down at the cattle lawns, and you're hearing this wonderful hocker, watching the competition, and those beers look good, I got to say. They look very good. Good to see you both.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here. And as you say, great weather for it as well.
Isn't it?
The other thing too, attendance, how have you gone the last 3 days? So Friday was the first day.
Friday was the first day. Michael, attendance has been unbelievable. We've had about 170,000 people come through in the last 3 days. So we were estimating around maybe that 145, 150 mark. So we've exceeded our budgeted attendance for a non-school holiday on the first 3 days of the show. Today is Seniors Day. Competition's happening everywhere. Traditionally, the crowds are a little bit lower on this day. That's, you know, historically, that's what it tells us. But I think we're going to go over our budget again. So I've got a massive smile on my face, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and the entries are up. I mean, the pig entries, they were the standout, is that right?
Pig entries are up like you wouldn't believe. We've got a wonderful event tonight called Pigs and Pinot. So that's a brand new thing that we're having here. Pig entries are up, so are goat entries. The steers entries have also increased. So is horse and arts and crafts and goats. Sheep are up. It's a remarkable year. People in regional Australia have really turned it up and decided the Sydney Royal Easter Show has got to be part of their calendar
this year. And the sheep, of course, with the sheep, there's also the wool auction again here this year. There's been a hiatus of that for a few years.
There has been. So AWEX are back. They're inside the sheep pavilion. We're going to see them auction wool over 2 days. And nearly $18 million of wool will pass through their hands. And that's just within this particular market. As you know, those auctions take place right across Australia. But with AWEX here on site, and it's a wonderful site too, because I think it gives people the opportunity to see that financial aspect of agriculture, which none of us really see. So that's a real highlight for us in the sheep pavilion.
And it's quite a complicated process when you see it happening there. They set it up, you know, the full-on auction rooms right there where they're judging the sheep as well. So it's all together, which is great.
So we've built a purpose-built facility for them so they can hold the auction. While it's not 100% soundproof, it's as close as we can possibly get to it. But we've got large television screens. There's a little speaker outside, so when you come, you'll be able to see what's going on the inside. If you're bidding hundreds of thousands of dollars to purchase wool, you don't want to have a slip-up because the judging's happening on the ring. So we've had to get those two things operating at the same time, and I think we've got a really good formula.
Well, good luck with the rest of the show, thanks, Murray, and I know you've got to get back to it, so we appreciate your time
good
on the
to
program
see you
today.
And thank you both for coming out.
You're listening to The Country Hour. We're broadcasting, as I said, from the cattle lawns where they're doing the judging as we speak. It's 8 minutes past 12.
On ABC Radio New South Wales, you're with Michael Condon for the New South Wales Country Hour.
Your family's been showing at the Sydney Royal Easter Show. Jeff, thanks for joining us on The Country Hour.
No, thank you very much.
Tell us about your connection to the show and where it all started.
Well, for me, you've just mentioned that my family was showing already. So my father, when he started in 1953, bought a couple of females and a bull, and he brought his first exhibit, which is one of those calves and one of those females, the next year, because he felt the Sydney Show was the place that he could learn the most about not only the industry, but how to get involved and how to get going. So.
Now, you were also one of the first rural achievers, is that right, as
I was
well?
Very, very lucky to be one of the first group in 1990. It's such a fantastic award, and really it gives you opens a lot of doors, and you meet a lot of people with it, and it was such an honour to be one of the first rural achievers.
And, Jeff, you're a Hereford man?
That's right.
and we've got the judging going on behind us. Tell us a little bit about what people are watching here and how you make those judgments between breeds. That must be a big challenge.
That's right. At the moment, it's the interbreed judging's taking place in the cattle lawns at the moment, which is all the champions being judged against each other. And as you said, it's a very difficult job for the judges. But shows is all about benchmarking, and it's probably the quickest way to benchmark. Like, I know a lot of the computer people think that the computers will do it, but for actual structural assessment and all the other bits and pieces that you can't see through a computer is what you see on the judging lawn, and that's what they're out here. So it's not just breed type, but how they fit into the whole beef industry and what benefit they'll make in the future to that industry.
Yeah, interesting that you say that. So they and the stalwarts in the wool industry say that too, that you need that constitution as well. You need those figures. You need the figures to help you make decisions, but you also you really need to know the animal too.
That is exactly right. And one thing to come out of all the COVID years was the fact that all the online auctions are fantastic, but unless you can actually see those animals, you don't get the real picture. And that's why it's so beneficial to be out there. And with the shows, for us, if you were not to come to the likes of the top show in the country here in Sydney, then you wouldn't know where your cattle actually stood amongst your peers and the rest of the industry.
And Jeff, you're a Hereford man. There's often that comparison, Hereford's versus Angus cattle, and they're being compared right behind us today on the lawn. Where are things at with the marketing of Herefords in 2024, and they're still not attracting that premium in the sale yards like the black cattle do?
It's interesting that you say that. Recently, we sold big grass fattened steers, and they were about 20 cents above what the Angus competition on the day, but always on the day when you're talking sale yard prices. But the Herefords have really taken off in the last few years, especially in the really tough areas, either in the western districts or also up and along the mountains. And those Omeo calf sales a couple of weeks ago, that's the fourth or fifth time in a row that they've out-averaged the competition up there. And producers are really happy about that, but also the people that buy those steers and take them on. And it's interesting also that it's the 40th year of the making of the Man from Snowy River. And if you go back and watch that movie and you see Spur, and he said there's nothing that beats a prime grass-fattened Hereford steer. So there you go.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us on the Country Hour today, and congratulations on 70 years at the Sydney Royal Easter Show.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bush there.
You're listening to the Country Hour, 13 past 12.
On ABC Radio New South Wales, this is the New South Wales Country Hour.
Now we were just talking there to Jeff Bush, who was one of the original rural achievers from 1990, and he said it was a great privilege to be a rural achiever. We're joined by a current crop of rural achievers, Grace Pearce and Joel Maguire join us here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having us here.
And tell us a little about your background, Grace, because we were just talking there about, you know, looking to the future and genetics and those sorts of things. And that's really your bag, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's my avenue. So I come from a super fine merino property, but I'm now delving into the reproduction side of cattle. So I have my own business in artificial insemination and preg testing of cattle.
Mm. And you also went off to uni as well, got some qualifications.
Correct. So I work for a gentleman while I was doing my course. So I did my whole course by correspondence, and 2 years, or about roughly 18 months ago, I started my own business, and then I finished uni last year.
Wait, to stay on the farm, that was the idea?
Yeah, the idea to keep working so I could gain that experience and not be stuck at uni, and it has been a huge benefit to pull me ahead of the pack.
So doing a little bit of both, maybe, you know, getting the theoretical side as well as the practical.
Yeah, it was great to have the theory side at uni and then putting it into practice in the field.
Mm. And you're seeing a lot more interest from people in driving genetics and looking at AI, and is that a key focus for you, and you're seeing more of that come through in the industry at the moment?
Yeah, I think the limited AI technicians around is a little bit scary sometimes, so being a personnel to encourage that has been great, especially to the younger generation.
And Joel, tell us about your background in agriculture and what made you want to become a rural achiever.
Well, I actually come from a non-agricultural background originally, so born in Sydney, family are from Sydney, and thankfully they decided to go to Orange when I was quite young. So I then delved into it through school, got some great opportunities there and started showing cattle and realised that I loved cattle and that's what I wanted to do. So moving from there, I started working for people and showing cattle and doing different things and finding different avenues in the industry. We get plenty of good opportunities to do so, which is awesome. So did that and then went to Armidale UNE and studied agriculture and business there, and then went on to manage an Angus stud, and now I work livestock health consulting and just started my own Angus stud as well.
Wow, starting your own Angus stud. What's your focus? What sets you apart and what are you looking for in Angus cattle?
Well, look, there are a fair few people around the place that are breeding Angus cattle, but I'm all about relationships. I think, you know, if you have good relationships and you breed a product that will work for you and you believe will work for someone else, then that sets you apart.
Yeah, I was interested in that in the sense we were talking Herefords just a moment ago, and so that rivalry there exists between the Hereford and the Angus. You reckon you went the Angus route?
I did. Although there are a fair few people breeding Angus, Angus are really marketable, and that pushed me into breeding Angus. I think Hereford are a great breed, and together they work really well. They work really, really well. So they still have plenty of relevance, and we need all of the different breeds still in our industry. But yeah, I think I went the Angus so that I could market them a bit easier.
And Grace, we also were talking there with we're talking about the sheep situation, the cattle situation rather, in terms of genetics. But Jeff Bush was just talking about constitution. You've got to see the animal. You've got to see them at the judging. You've got to be here like cattle judging. You've got to have the judging in the sheep pavilion as well. You know, how do you marry the two? How do you, you know, the genes and all the you work out the figures on that, and then you know, you've got to look at the animal.
I think, and what I recommend to my clients, figures are huge, absolutely huge, but in the end you've got to like the animal. So they can have all the figures in the world, but phenotypically they might not be the animal that we want. So I think having that excellent balance between the two, whether you want that low birth weight but good growth, you need to really get that good cross of what you're achieving. So I think in my field, what I really appreciate is choosing those genetics for the clients, everyone with different goals, and then going back and seeing those calves and seeing if those genetics worked. And it is an experiment sometimes, and we are seeing those great crosses, and they're brought here to Sydney Royal and those significant shows.
Interesting that you
say. So you can see those traits coming through, those ones that are really heritable, and they're coming through in the progeny.
Yeah, absolutely, especially traits like your low birth weights. They're a big, massive trait for it, especially a lot of my small clients around Mudgee. We don't want them having to pull calves all the time, and we have a lot of Sydney farmers buying properties around Mudgee, so it's important for them to have the ease of being able to be in the industry but also not being a massive challenge for them.
And Joel, what about 2024, Rural Achiever? What's the sentiment like amongst, I guess, in agriculture at the moment, amongst farmers that you're speaking to? How are people feeling at this point in the season?
Look, that's always a bit of a difficult question. There are plenty of challenges, and the good times do come, but often it's pretty closely followed by a challenge. But agricultural people are pretty resilient, and I think that's what makes our industry so great, that we are resilient and we just enjoy what we do and we just keep going and going, and that's pretty special, I think.
And yeah, and look, I noticed that when we were talking about genetics, you were nodding in terms of the Angus. So obviously important to you, your operation, what you do.
Yeah, I'm very passionate about. Well, that's my passion, and I love genetics, and I love being able to pick something out and put it together and see what you get at the end. And yeah, it's awesome.
So the data versus showing side, how do you feel about that sort of debate?
I think data, as Grace said, data is really relevant. I think there's been a fair push in the last few years to make data more relevant, and it is definitely a very useful tool. But as Grace said again, phenotype is everything, and I'm more of a phenotype person than a data person, but at the end of the day, data still needs to be there.
And also when you're talking, Grace, about the superfine wool, so you need that. You need the data for that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's not my major chosen avenue, but it was what my grandfather did for our property, and it is very data-based, but again, in that industry as well, when we're at Sydney Royal, you know, it's judged on phenotype and their opinion of those, the data that's there. So yeah, definitely relevant in nearly every industry that we see in agriculture.
Appreciate your time on the program. Congratulations for being Rural Achievers for 2024. Grace Pearce and John Maguire, thanks for joining us.
Thanks
on the Country
so much
Hour.
For having us.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
And good luck with the future. You're listening to the Country Hour. It's coming up to 20 past 12.
On ABC Radio New South Wales, this is the New South Wales Country Hour.
And we might move away from the show at the moment now, and we might head to hear about Winx, because the champion race mare Winx has been a household name, of course, notching up 25 Group 1. 25 Group 1 wins, wow, and a world record 33 race winning streak up until she was retired in 2019. Now her first foal is ready to be auctioned at a public sale in just 2 weeks' time. With the looks and attitude of her mother, the filly's sale has attracted global interest, and the price could break, they're predicting it could break all-time records for the thoroughbred yearling sale. And Amelia Bernasconi visited the filly itself at the Coolmore Stud, so that was pretty special in itself, and spoke to her connections ahead of the big sale.
She's been described as having spark and sass and mirroring many characteristics of her mother. For now, she's been dubbed Little Winx, the first foal out of the mighty mare sired by a champion in his own right, Piero. At 18 months old, this filly will hit the sale ring in just 2 weeks' time, a sale many thought may never happen. Part owner Peter Tighe says it was just the right time.
Oh, it's not my decision alone. I mean, the owners, three groups that own it, you know, our family, Peter's family and the Troyk family, and we discussed and just came up and thought it was the right thing to take it to the market and give everybody the opportunity to be involved, not just keep her for ourselves. And we can still be involved again. We're not shut out from buying back into her and things like that. So it was a great opportunity for the ownership group to stay involved if they wanted or not. But happy to take it to the market. And it's the next chapter in the Winx story.
Well, the Winx story has been incredible. I mean, can you recap some of your highlights with this incredible mare?
Well, look, we were on this incredible journey for 5 years. We hardly were at home. We travelled the world. You know, she took us to places that we'd never been. We met hundreds and hundreds of people, made lots and lots and lots of friends. There's so many good memories that, you know, doesn't do it justice to single them out, but the racing in Australia and the way she was adored by not only the racing public, but just everybody that jumped on board, and such a great time. And to this day, it's still a great time. You know, she's really become an icon of racing and folklore in Australia now.
But of course, poor Winx did have a really challenging start to the broodmare career. How do you feel now seeing this stunning filly that she's produced, and she's ready to start training?
Yeah. Not far off. No, it's not all smooth sailing with these sort of things, with the breeding. And she had a bit of a checkered start. We did lose the first foal, but in saying that, we gave her time to get over that, both physically and mentally, because we wanted her to be, you know, if she was going to be right to breed, we were happy to breed, but if she wasn't, we wouldn't have. But she came through it good. She had a great 12 months off. We put her into a service with Piero, and we've ended up with this lovely filly, and we couldn't be more happy, and Winx was just an absolute super mum. You know, I think she got a lot of satisfaction out of it as well.
Prepared at Coolmore, stud principal Tom Magnus says the Winx story has come full circle.
It's really exciting for the staff on the farm. Obviously, they fold Winx down here. We raise Winx here. And that just became the stuff of legends. You know, she became the greatest filly mare in Australian history. And, you know, the world knew about Winx. She captured generations. She brought young kids to the track. And Australia does it like nowhere else in the world, in that you could walk down the street and say to somebody, who is Winx? And they would tell you. That doesn't happen anywhere in the world. You know, the passion that Australia has for racing and the following that Australia has for racing, I think it's massively exciting.
Tell us about her filly. You mentioned that, Chris Waller, who of course trained Winx, has been keeping an eye to this filly as well.
Yeah, Chris comes up here to see the horses a lot, and he's paid particular attention to this filly. He always comes up to see Winx, and he agrees. It's a really lovely filly. She's improving all the time. She's got a lot of characteristics similar to her mother. You know, there's going to be a limited edition, I'd say, as we know. But it's a huge thing. And I think that I said to somebody that they think Taylor Swift going to Sydney was big. Wait till you see this Winx going to England. This is going to be another level again.
With global interest, the filly is expected to break records. By just how much remains to be seen. The filly yearling record stands at $2.6 million. The all-time yearling record was paid for a Black Caviar half-brother in 2013. That price tag was $5 million. English Bloodstock Chief Executive Sebastian Hutch says the only way to describe this sale is unprecedented.
Winx is just the most extraordinary racehorse, not just in a domestic context, but in an international context. You know, 25 Group 1s, winning streak at 33 consecutive races, that's extraordinarily rare in any sport. So it follows through, certainly in Bloodstock, that a female offspring or any offspring of a mare of that quality would be hugely desirable. It's made all the more appealing by the fact that female offspring of a mare of her quality are just rarely, if ever, offered a public auction. And I think that's been a huge factor in driving the number or the volume of interest in this filly.
The final price tag will be eye-watering to just the average Joe, but you speak about the value that people will see in this filly. What are you ballparking her sale price at?
I'm absolutely not ballparking anything. I've sort of tried to park that idea to the back of my mind the whole way through. You know, like, I think at this juncture it's something that anybody who's serious about investing in quality bloodstock should be considering carefully. You know, the owners are very much of a mindset that are going to the sale with the intention to sell. So while people speculate as to figures, you know, you got to be in it to win it.
Got to be in it to win it. That's English Bloodstock CEO Sebastian Hutch ending that report from Amelia Bernasconi. And Winx filly is going to be selling on April the 8th. So we'll be watching that very closely at the English Easter yearling sale. And we'll also have more coverage then from the event. Amelia Bernasconi heading down to the sale. You're listening to The Country Hour here with Josh Becker. And Josh, we've got one of the finalists in the President's Medal, the prestigious President's Medal. You'll be talking pork.
Yes, we're here with Sean Blanken. We're talking from Gumshire Pork in South Australia. Welcome to the country, Sean.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Paint a picture of your operation.
Barossa Valley, South Australia, we're down at 300 South Piggery, family-owned piggery. Started from nothing, my father and mum, so been along the whole journey with them. Farrow to finish, so very busy operation down there.
Mm. And why did you decide to get into the pigs?
Dad had pigs when I was born, I think a couple of years before, just in the old styes, and I guess the passion grew from there, being at the back door, having pigs there.
Yeah, and I guess what's different too is that the President's Medal looks at a whole range of things, including you have to be environmentally eco-friendly as well.
Sustainability.
It's really important. So those things would have changed in recent years.
Massive, yeah. The change in the industry has been massive. You know, technology to improve everything and all that, and being more efficient, data entry, so you know where your numbers lie, so all that stuff.
Yeah, what's your focus when people say, how do you drive sustainability in your operation? What do you focus on?
I guess animal welfare is the biggest thing, and using technology to your advantage and reusing. Buy a lot of grain from producers that are low chemical sprayers as well, because we think that influences your flavour of the meat too, what you feed the animal. And you know, we're massive on the flavour of the meat and the product we're giving to the consumer at the end. We want them to have a good experience, and it all starts with what you feed them, how you house them, and all the welfare.
Because the pig industry has been under scrutiny for the last few years, it's when it comes to the animal welfare side of things.
Yeah, I think most industries are in that, but the pig industry is still looked at as very intensive, and the way we run our pigs is your eco shelters, straw based domes. It's nearly the next step from being free range, and you know, we still put in a lot of hours to make sure the animals get the best of their life while we've got them.
And also, talking about that, you're involved in agriculture education, getting young people involved, trying to do mentor as well.
Yeah, it's half the reason you come to the shows, educate people. You've got pigs here in the city. Kids come through, they never see animals like that, so that's why we're here as well. And yeah, we open up our farm to anyone, students, university students, whoever wants to come, people visiting. We got nothing to hide, so we're more than happy to people to show them through, and hope we can set the benchmark for our industry, I suppose.
Does that is that a big part of what the Sydney Royal is? It's that connection between the city and what's actually happening on the farm, and painting a picture for those that don't have that connection to agriculture.
Yeah, that's why it's called an agricultural show, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's, we all bring animals here for the city people to see. So they know their milk comes from a cow, not out of a supermarket, and their pork comes from a pig and their bacon, not the supermarket. So that's what we're here for. And, anyone that stops in for ask a question, we'll give them the time, because, they just don't know, so we're happy to educate them.
Interesting you say that, because there are some in the industry that, they are a bit secretive, and they don't really want too many people on the farm looking at what they're doing. But you're saying, we're an open book, we're happy to have people through looking at it.
Yes, it also comes back to biosecurity. You have to be careful.
Yeah,
we have a policy that you have to obey by, but we tell people prior to that, and then obviously clothing and showering and stuff like that. But I think if everyone can be a bit more open about it. I mean, our farm is also, it's not old compared to other farms too, so it's easy to show off as well, I guess. But we do make the effort to keep our farm in a very good condition, but we've always been that sort of people.
And particular breeds that you focus on?
Yeah, so we've got, at the show here, we've got four different breeds, a large white landrace, the Durox and the Hampshires. Only ones in the shed running that many breeds here at Sydney. Most of the other exhibitors have only one or two, so we've got our hands full on judging day with everything going on. Focus on that. And a lot of F1 crossbreeding back home for our commercial guys to put in breeding females back into their commercial herds. So, yeah.
It doesn't get confusing when you've got so many breeds. You need to focus on certain parts of the industry, so you need different pigs for that.
Yeah, well, we're doing a different. I mean, I suppose I've been brought up a little different, because I got brought through the stud scene a bit at Adelaide Show when I was 9 or 10, I believe, and started a stud at 11 years old, and used to look after pigs from guys up this way, send them down to Adelaide before I could drive. So got brought through the show scene and got a big passion for stud pigs that way, and it's very unique in our industry. There's not many of us that do it anymore. It's great to have APL, Australian Port Limited, here this week, helping our section, and it's really opened their eyes to what we do as well.
Well, appreciate your time on the program today, and good luck in the President's Medal, which is later this week.
Yeah, on Wednesday night we've got the medal. The finalists, it's an awesome achievement. I never even thought of running for this, and when we got a good result with our pork and the fine food section had come along, and it's been a great journey. The RAS has been really supportive, the judges and all that have been great, so can't commend them highly enough for what they've done to it for us.
And a great part of the world, the Barossa Valley. Okay, well, thanks for your time on the program.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
You're listening to The Country Hour. That's we were just talking there to Sean Blinkiron, who's involved in Gumshire Pork in Kyneton in South Australia. Time to go to some news headlines. First, Adam Storey's there. Good afternoon,
Michael. Sorry, mate, you got me there.
I can hear you.
Excellent. The Federal Treasurer is urging the Fair Work Commission to increase the minimum wage separate to the government's income tax cuts. The Fair Work Commission is holding its annual wage review, and the federal government has made a submission calling for an increase in line with inflation. The current minimum wage currently $23.23 an hour, which equates to just under $46,000 for full-time workers. But the Treasurer says he doesn't want to see the income tax cuts used as a tool to limit any increase by the Commission. 19 people have been charged over an overnight protest that blocked access to Port Botany. Police were called to the port just before 7 last night and began arresting protesters. The Maritime Union says several union officials were among those taken into custody during the protest, which was targeting an Israeli shipping line. All have been charged with obstruction and failing to comply with a move-on direction. In Israel itself, it's been reported that Israeli forces are attacking three different hospitals across the Gaza Strip, with at least 10 Palestinians reported to have been killed in an airstrike. The Red Crescent organization says the IDF surrounded the Al Amal and Nasser hospitals in the southern city of Khan Yunis, where it continued a siege there, with the Israelis saying that Hamas is using them as operational bases. And back home, the police minister, Yasmin Catley, remains under pressure over the appointment of a former television producer as the police commissioner's top media advisor. The opposition is saying that Steve Jackson has too many ties to the police minister's office, and that basically this appointment needs to be looked at, and they're actually considering a referral to the ICAC. So that's what's happening here, but it's another different thing at the show, I'd imagine. None of these issues are being talked about out there, I think.
Oh, maybe they're talking about the wage case.
Yeah, could be. Yeah.
We've got some noisy Angus cattle here at the front, right out in front of where I'm standing at the moment. That's what you can hear.
You always pick the noisy spots to do this outside broadcast.
We do it on purpose.
I know you
it
need
the... It adds to the character.
I know you need the atmosphere and everything.
We need the atmosphere. It's too boring being the studio.
I know.
Yeah.
At least you're not
stuck in it. You know only too well.
So I know, yes. Thank you.
All right, Adam, thanks for that.
All right.
Adam will be back at 1 o'clock. You're listening to The Country Hour. Let's find out what's happening with the weather. Is Yuan Park at the Bureau? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mike.
So it's pretty warm and sunny here at the show. Is that the case around the rest of the state?
Yes, that's right. Generally dry weather conditions expected in much of the states over the coming days, maybe apart from some scattered light showers along the far north coast today, maybe north of Coffs Harbour. Generally stable weather conditions are promoted by a high pressure ridge extending across the state from a slow-moving high pressure system over the Bight. And with these, yes, generally stable weather conditions and perhaps relatively mild temperatures as well, with maximum temperatures in mid to high 20s or perhaps reaching slightly above 30 degrees in some parts in the west. And then showers will extend across the whole coastal district and the eastern ranges from the midweek onward with the development of the onshore easterly winds. But generally few millimeters of rainfall in general, so nothing much. Then towards the end of the weekdays into the weekend, we may see some widespread showers or rain and thunderstorms developing in the state's far west with potential for moderate to heavy falls in the maybe upper and the lower western as a low pressure trough in the state's far west deepens. And some computer models indicate maybe widespread 30 to 70 millimeters of rainfall in the state's far west during the period. And then
is it going to extend to the rest of the state then, Juan?
Yes, maybe it may be shifting to the eastern district early new week. But the rainfall amount will be significantly decreasing by the time the rain areas shift to the east early next week. But on the other hand, there is still large degree of uncertainties, so the actual amount of rainfall is still highly uncertain. But on the other hand, it looks like we may see wet conditions during the Easter weekend into Easter Monday in many parts of the state.
Right, okay, so wet conditions if you're out camping, which is whenever I do camping in Easter, that's always what happens to me. It's always raining.
Yes.
I remember being flooded out once.
Maybe not flooding in your campsite, I hope not, but there is a good chance that you may get wet, yes.
Right, okay, well, but it's a bit uncertain and we don't know the sort of millimetres and where it might be. There is some moisture feeding in, though, from Queensland, so we'll have to watch it, I guess.
That's right, yes.
Okay, Juan, thanks for that.
My pleasure.
It's coming up to 21 minutes to 1 on the Country Hour.
Hello, I'm Rachel Mealy. Join me for The World Today. Wage race. The federal government calls for minimum wages to keep pace with inflation. So is a 4% wage rise on the cards? And Russia's deadliest terrorist attack in 20 years claims more than 130 lives. Has Vladimir Putin taken his eye off the ball when it comes to domestic security? The World Today at lunchtime.
And on the Country Hour, broadcasting from the Royal Easter Show, they're doing the cattle judging. That's what you can hear in the background at the moment. And I'm joined here by Josh Becker, one of the legends of rural broadcasting. And we're also joined by a show legend here. Tell us about Doug.
Doug Crowell is with us from the Central Districts exhibit. And Doug, you've been involved and recognised this year as the 2024 show legend, and you're from Tamworth. Doug, how does it feel to be the show legend?
It's really knocked the wind out of me sails, I can tell you that much, because I didn't even know there was such a thing as a show legend before they presented me with one.
You've had a huge involvement with the show. 55 years you've been involved in the show. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I was a farmer and lucky enough to have a son that would look after the farm while I took time off and went to the Sydney show and enjoyed myself helping to stage the exhibit.
And how's the Central District exhibit looking this year?
It's very, very good, because we've got a very good manager and we come first, and that's contributing very well to our bag of goodies.
Now, I understand, Doug, you're also keenly involved in trying to get younger people involved, maybe doing a bit more mentoring to get people. Tell us about that. Why is that necessary?
About
mentoring people, that younger people, get them involved in the
show. Oh, yes. Well, that's always the hardest part, because when we had junior farmers, it was fairly easy to attract them out of that area into the show circuits, but that's now no longer existing, so we've got to pull our helpers, and most of them are coming up around the 50s and 60s when you get them to come in, and we were lucky this year. We've got some very good ones from Coffs Harbour, and they work very hard and contributed a lot to our stage.
And talking about youngsters, we're joined here by Alison Kernahan, who's actually currently the youngest court manager for the district exhibits. Is that right?
I'm thinking so.
So they tell me.
If you've heard that, it must be right.
Must be true. And so, how did you get involved?
My grandfather started showing corn down here in the 1940s. And then my father carried it on, and then I used to come down with my dad as a kid, and I've carried it on, and now I have a daughter and son that actually is down here this year trying to follow it on as well.
And not only have you grown maize for the show, but you won the perpetual trophy for champion maize in 2023, so and it's purpose grown for the Sydney Royal?
Yes, we've got about 5 acres at home that we specifically grow open pollinated, and it's called Red Hogan, and we just specifically grow that corn just for the show down here.
Right, and why is that? Because it's, you need something extra special?
It is. It's a very rare breed. You can't buy the seeds anywhere. The only reason open pollinated corn is grown is for the Sydney Royal Show. So we just, and you've got to grow it somewhere separate where it doesn't cross pollinate with anything else. And so we have secret little patches on our farm that we just grow the corn for the show.
And what's this year been like as a growing season?
It's been very tough. The grubs have been very hard on the corn this year, and there before Christmas when it was time to plant, we got very dry up there at Gloucester, and a lot of farmers were actually running out of water again before Christmas. So it's been either too dry or too wet. It's the last few years have been really tough.
And you also run a dairy farm as well, is that right?
Yes, my partner's got a dairy farm, and I run beef cattle on my farm, and so it's very busy.
Yeah, sounds like it. And tell us about this particular maize, what does it taste like? Do you You say it's special.
You can eat it. It's red corn. Yeah. It actually grows red. Yeah. And you can
I've seen
eat
it. I've seen it before.
Only when it's very young.
Right.
But it hasn't got the sweetness to what sweet corn does. Mm. It's more cow feed.
But it also, it's because of the look. You want the look for the show, is that right?
Yes. Mm. So when we bring it down for silage. So we have to go into the paddock, pick the stalk of corn that's got no blemishes on the leaves, and you've got to get the cob at the right maturity, and you've got to find a stalk with the same weight of cob to the same weight of the stalk, and then you wrap it all up in hessian and put it on the back of the ute and try and get it to the show down here without it getting damaged.
Good luck with that. And Doug, before you go, I just wanted to ask you about your involvement in the show over these 70 years or so, or more, that you've been involved in. How difficult is it to get a district exhibit up and running and to get it just right, just perfect?
I was involved with the grain section when I first started, and we had quite a bit of success with cleaning it. We were probably the first of the exhibits that hand-picked the grains one by one, we were very successful in that way, but very hard work, long hours.
Hand-picked.
Dedicated. You've got to go around to the growers and get the samples that they want, and high in protein and heavy in weight, We've got to do the final touches to it, and then we exhibit it for the growers' benefits.
Well, Doug Crowell, congratulations on the 2024 show legend and for your contribution to the Royal Easter Show. And Alison Kernahan, thanks for joining us on the Country Hour as well.
No problem. Thank you.
You're listening to the Country Hour. It's coming up to 14 minutes to one.
The New South Wales Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And we're joined now. Well, Josh, I'll hand it over to you.
Yes, we're joined now. We've got, the Sydney Royal Easter Show. There's plenty of students coming along to see what they can do at the show. They're not only participating, but a great chance to take it all in. We're joined at the moment by teacher Ken Hawley and students Bailey, Henry and Lily. Thanks so much for joining us on the Country Hour today.
Thank you for having us.
Tell us about what you guys are up to at the show.
We're from Peak Hill Central School, way out in the central west of New South Wales, and we've been lucky enough to come down to the Sydney Royal for the second year exhibiting Angora goats. It's the second year down here. We've brought 17 four-legged kids and 10 two-legged kids, so it's quite a large number of legs that have come down this year.
And we'll bring in some of the students to tell us a little bit about what's involved. Bailey, I'll get you to start. Tell us about what's involved in bringing the Angora goats down to the Sydney Royal.
Washing them and clipping their hooves and that. Yeah.
And Henry? What's involved? What are some of the activities needed to get the goats ready for the judging?
Teaching them to lead. Mm.
Yeah. And what about you, Lily? What do you enjoy about the Angora goats?
When you wash them and pick out all the burrs and all the straw out of their face.
And Ken, it sounds like it must be a great opportunity for the kids to take part in the Angora goat judging as well, and submitting their animals and comparing them and benchmarking them against the others.
It's a fantastic opportunity, and it goes to show that little schools way out in the country can have the opportunity to come down to Sydney. We've got students, three of the students here with us today. Two of them have never been to Sydney Royal, so this is their first trip to Sydney. It's fantastic to see What's out there? And to get our students and our animals out in open company and just to see what we can do.
Yeah, and I guess a bit intimidating coming on the country out and talking on the radio as well.
There's no cameras here, so the students are a little bit happier with that. And the camera might actually work afterwards. No chance of it breaking.
Now, I just wanted to ask about the Angora goat. So it seems to have been having a bit of a resurgence too, I guess, in terms of, you know, the popularity and things, you know, Australia-wide as well.
Goat is, overall, is the largest eaten red meat in the world. Angoras produce a product called mohair, which is one of the finest fleeces in the world. It's a very low micron, doesn't have the scratchy and itchiness to it, and it's becoming a very popular fibre, and they're small animals that are easy to handle and good for small holdings and those sorts of things. If you're downsizing from cattle, an Angora is a little bit easier to handle.
And it makes sense that for Peak Hill Central School that you'll be focusing on goats. I imagine that's, you know, a big part of the industry.
Angora goats, probably not part of the industry out there, but we're in an area that's strong history with sheep and sheep shearing and everything. One of the ideas of having the Angoras at school by our principal is that the Angoras need shearing twice a year. They need crutching another two times in between that. And they're skills that the students can learn and they're skills that they can transfer to move on. We're trying to future-proof our students so that once they leave school, they've got a range of different pathways that they can go down. It doesn't matter if they're working with Angora goats or if they're working with the ducks at school or our poultry. Working with animals, the skills that you learn are transferable across all different animals and all the different livestock.
So there might not be Angora goats running wild west of Peak Hill, but there'd be a few other goats.
Oh, there's definitely ferals. I see ferals driving to school pretty much every day.
And are you focusing on the fibre production, really, or the meat as well? What's the focus?
We're focusing on the fibre. Yep. We're going for the fine Angoras as opposed to the commercial ones, which are the heavier fleece, higher micron, and probably a larger frame with more meat on them. If you're going to focus on a meat animal, we'd go with boar goats. We wanted having an animal that students could learn skills with and have those shearing skills and other husbandry skills to go with that.
And where to from now with the program at the school?
Onwards and upwards. This is our second year at Sydney Royal. We've just had our third lot of kids born at school, so it's onwards and upwards. The sky's the limit.
Ken Hawley, thanks so much for joining us on the New South Wales Country Hour. Thanks also to Bailey Garwin, Henry Stanford and Lily Gavin. Thanks so much.
You're listening to the Country Hour. It's time to go to markets. First up, let's go to Bendigo Sheep and Lambs.
Good afternoon. Less lambs at 13,700 head in the lead up to the Easter break. The market was dearer by $10 to $20 over heavy and trade slaughter lambs, but in carcass price terms didn't quite hit the heights of Wagga last week. It was the light and secondary lambs in the 15 to 20 kilo weight bracket which really lifted at Bendigo today. Some of these MK type categories up by $25 and more. Export lambs over 30 kilos carcass weight, 185 to a top of 244 to be trending around 660, 670 cents. The 26 to 30 kilo lambs, 160 to 212 to be around 650 cent mark. Heavy trades, 145 to 174. And the medium trades, 22 to 24 kilos, 130 to 158. A lot of these lambs estimated between 610 to 660 cents. Pushing up into these carcass cost points were lighter and plainer lambs, decent types with frame from 90 to 130, smaller lambs mostly 50 to 90. Sheep prices varied either side of last week, with light mutton lacking some buying activity today. Big crossbred ewes 70 to 90, good merino ewes 60 to 100, plainers ewes 12 to 30. Jenny Kelly for MLA.
Let's go to Corowa Sheep and Lambs.
Good afternoon, agents penned 18,495 sheep and lambs. That's an additional 8,000 than last week's sale and quality lifted. with stronger competition from an increased buying group, drove the market up by $15 to $25. Heavy trade lambs jumped $23 to $25, $140 to $187, to average 738 cents per kilo carcass weight. Heavy lambs gained $16, selling from $174 to $205. An extra heavy over 30 kilo lamb sold up to $222. Light lambs, the processor, sold from $98 to $112. Restockers paying from $20 to $113 for lambs back to the paddock. Mutton was firm to dearer. Heavy merino ewes up to $16 stronger, $77 to $93. Heavy crossbred ewes were mostly unchanged, $64 to $72. And merino wethers made up to $116. I'm Caroline Ronald for MLA at Corowa.
To Dubbo sheep and lambs now.
Lamb numbers were down 3,400 for Yarni of 12,000. Quality was mixed with mostly trade weights and Dorpers penned, although there were good numbers of heavy shorn lambs available. Most of the regular buyers were operating. Two score processing lambs to 16 kilos sold from 25 to 60. Light trade lambs 16 to 20 kilos were up to $10 a year, selling between 106 and 125. Trade weights 20 to 24 kilos saw an increase of $5 to $10, 119 to 150. Lambs 24 to 26 kilos were firm, 155 to 168, and heavy lambs to 30 kilos also firm, 175 to 205, while extra heavies reached 213. Hoggets sold from 72 to 146, with the balance of the lambs and the mutton yet to sell. This has been Angus Williams at Dubbo.
Let's go to Wagga Cattle now.
Good afternoon. In today's sale report, the standard feature was the resurgence of restockers following favourable rains up north. With a yarding of 3,365, there was a notable presence of lighter weight cattle suitable for restocking purposes. Feedlots did dominate across most categories, propelling prices upwards. However, there was scarcity of cattle suitable for domestic processes weighing under 500 kilo. Trade heifers experienced a decline of 8 cents, 240 to 315. Meanwhile, a solitary pen of trade steers 400 to 500 fetched 336. Restockers saw a notable increase of 15 cents, with prices ranging from $3 to $4.08. Feeder steers in the 280 to 330 kilo range witness a significant surge of 100 cents, commanding prices from 366 to 392. Medium weight feeder steers improved 13 cents, averaging $1,389 a head. Heavy feeder steers saw a gain of 30 cents, averaging $1,712 a head. Heavy steers and bullocks destined for processors lifted 25 to 35 cents, fetching 280 to 324. Cow buyers faced intense competition for well-finished heavy types, resulting in a surge of 15 cents. Heavy cows traded to 225 to 255, while leaner grades $2 to 230, and cows back to the paddock 212 to 245. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Let's go to Forbes Cattle now.
Numbers fell this sale, with agents yarding just 629 head. Quality was continues to be mixed, with both well-finished and planter types penned. Yearlings made up the majority of the yarding, along with a handy penning of cows, and the usual buyers are present competing in a dearer market. Yearling steers to feed lifted 20 cents, with prices ranging from 290 to 335. Finished types to processors received from 281 to 330 cents. The heifer portion was 5 to 10 cents better, with feeders paying from 263 to 304. Those to processors received from 270 to 324.
And that's Crystal Ridley there. Let's go to Tamworth Cattle.
Good afternoon. Once again, steers of all descriptions were keenly sought by restockers and feedlots, while processor demand for cows improved. A reduced penning of 1,399 head. Quality was fair to very good in front of increased restocker competition and absentee in the heavy trade ranks. Steer weaners to restockers sold to dearer trends, with strong quality-related price gains up to 330 kilos, sold from 285 to 420 cents a kilo, heavier weights to 388. The heifer portion slightly cheaper to 286 cents up to 330 kilos, while heavier weights reached 318 cents. Heavyweight yearling feeder steers are up to 8 cents dearer, 282 to 362 cents. Cheaper trends on the yearling heifers to restock and feed. Lightweight restockers 202 to 284. Medium and heavyweight feeders 250 to 290. Three score trade 258 to 330. Ground steers sold at dearer trends. Feeders over 400 kilos 261 to 338. Those to process in excess of 500 kilos posted strong gains, 286 to 315. Heavyweight cows as much as 13 cents dearer, 200 to 248. While two score mediumweight cows sold from 150 to 218 cents a kilo. James Armitage for MLA in Tamworth.
Thanks, James. That's the market information for today. And we're here at the Royal Easter Show. Josh Becker, there's a whole lot more coming up in the next few days.
Absolutely. We'll meet Paris Capel and Dominique Wise, two of the rural young women here at the Royal Easter Show. And we'll bring you the Supreme Brief Breed exhibit as well, the winners from that, as that's happening behind us.
And interesting about Paris is she's the first woman from Orange for 40 years. We'll sort of find out why, sort of what happened there. So it's a bit of an interesting tale to tell there. You'll be on the program tomorrow.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Lots more to come.
And also the wool auction later on in the week as well. We'll be broadcasting from the actual sheep pavilion as well to get all the action there too. It's coming up to 1 o'clock on the Country Hour.